Welcome to the French Connections Tuesday edition. Today's date is August 28th, 2007, and of course my name is Daryl Bradford Smith. It's wonderful to have you here with me for another installment of the French Connection. We, as always, are looking for the best research and the most important documented information that we can find worldwide. You'll remember our last file with Mohammed Rafig working on the Turkish question and the Sabbateans and the rest of it. And we've got a follow-up interview that's going to talk a little bit about that and some other subjects with a good friend of mine, somebody who I have admired for his dogged research for so long. His name is Tex Morris. He comes at this information from a dual stand. He comes at it from a religious standpoint as well as a research or historic standpoint. And it kind of blends very well with the information we've pulled out of historical documents and whatnot. And I want to bring him up right now because it's just a real pleasure to have him on the French Connection today. Tex, are you with me?
I sure am, Daryl, and it's great to be with you. And I want to say right off the bat, I appreciate a man with courage as you are. You know, we know people like Chris Bolin and others. We go all the way back to Danny Casolaro, who fought this, what Casolaro called the octopus, and ended up dead. So this is not anything to play with.
Nope.
And yet you keep coming back on the air, and evidently all I can believe is that you must have a great burden for truth. And that's why I so much appreciate being on your program. Really,
well, you know, we're not in the best favored position in the truth movement because we've been so strong on our opinions, and of course, when we saw somebody varying away from the facts that we discovered, we would point it out, and it didn't make us didn't win us friends and influence a lot of people. But what it has done instead is given us a bit of a reputation of being hard-nosed researchers, and it's paid off because many people are now discovering, as you are aware, that our research, yours, mine, and Eric's and Bolin's, is spot on. And it was hard about 2 years ago, I remember, when I first looked into your work. You were really a tip of the spear on a lot of these issues about the secrets behind Freemasonry. I mean, because everybody was believing when 2 years ago that Freemasonry is where it stopped. And the fact is, when you dug deeper, it went far further than that, didn't it, Tex?
Oh, absolutely, because Freemasonry really is just an underlying doctrine. But it does. Even the Freemasons, you know, Albert Pike, this former Sovereign Grand Commander back in the 19th century, said that the entire system of Freemasonry, its 33 rituals, are based on the Kabbalah.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, too, that Pike and others, Manly P. Hall, 33rd degree Mason, they have revealed the fact in their many books, for example, Hall's Secret Teachings of All Ages, that Freemasonry doesn't stop with the Jewish Kabbalah, with the system of magic of the rabbis, but that the Kabbalah itself really is based on the ancient mystery religions that go all the way back to mystery Babylon.
Yeah.
And of course we know the Jews were taken captive and they were there in Babylon. They learned directly from the magicians, the witch.
Yeah, the Baal Shams.
Absolutely. So they brought all this back, and that's what Jesus talked about when he warned of the man-made traditions. This is the Babylonian Kabbalah, and so it's all infested in Freemasonry. And so that's why, you know, at many Masonic meeting halls and temples, you're going to find the Jewish Star, so-called Jewish Star of David.
That's right.
Which isn't a Star of David at all. It's just called Rothschild Hexagram, you know, and such. Emblazoned on the walls, even on the doors of Masonic halls.
Well, you know what? Some time ago, I was doing some research with a guy that you've known quite well, Andrew Hitchcock. Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, I'll give his full name. He was, to me, Anonymous Andy when we were working together because he didn't want to let anybody know who he was. He was actually involved in working for a police department at the time. But his work got put into a book form, and I want to I admire you. You took his wonderful timeline of the Rothschilds and other banking families and made it available to your readers. And Tex, that was a real watershed moment for me when I saw that had come out on your site.
Well, I was glad to do that, and you know, belatedly, I went on your website. I think you have a lot, and I recommend people. You have the Rothschilds on there, a lot of information on the Rothschilds, and it's really in a more condensed form on your website. If it's still there, I don't mean to be.
Yeah, we still have the timeline. Yep.
Yeah, and that's very important to people to see historical, chronological, you know, item by item what the Rothschilds have done to influence world history, and they're even doing so today. And you know, we're on the very, I feel like I don't have all the pictures of the puzzle, but it seems we're on the very precipice. They are so emboldened now with their recent successes, and I just feel this imminence about some kind of a horrible catastrophe, some terrible tragedy that's about to overtake Europe and the United States very, very soon. I don't quite know what all is involved, but it's a great concern to us because we see the signs on every front, and the propaganda that Bush once revealed. He's so stupid and moronic that he sometimes reveals things he shouldn't, and he talked about that it was necessary to catapult the propaganda. What a statement President Bush made. We need to catapult the propaganda. That's interesting.
He's the dumbest man I've ever seen lead anything, and the fact is, you know as well as I do, this man is just a meat puppet. He's just somebody that just mouths the words. But here's the interesting thing you said about history and the Rothschilds. What we discovered in our research was that the Masonic Lodge in Paris, the Grand Orient Lodge, was the founder of the Italian Grand Orient Lodge, which was again the founder of the Salonika Greece Lodge that housed the Young Turks, where it was their proving ground and their launch pad for their assault on the Ottoman Turk Empire. And you had looked into some of these facts as well, and I thought maybe it'd be an opportunity for you to add a little color to it, as well as maybe, you know, this kind of information that only happened 100 years ago is germane to today's America, because the same kind of takeover has taken place in the United States.
Yeah, I think the takeover by the Young Turks, who were actually Jewish Turks, so far.
Yep.
Now, we have to remember, you know, that there are 18.5 million Jews around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So in whatever country they're in, they have risen to the top through financial shenanigans and their scheming and so forth.
Yeah.
Not every Jew I'm talking about. There is a faction, and most of the stronger countries around the world, of course, and Turkey had declined quite significantly, and they especially after World War One, for example. But Turkey was, you know, with the Ottoman Empire of the Moors and the Muslims, was a very strong system of government.
Yeah,
but it was quickly deteriorating, and so just as happened in the Soviet Union and Russia and those countries, that's what happened in Turkey. The Young Turks, as you more well stated it there, the Masons of Europe, the Jewish Masons from the Grand Orient Lodge and such, they had this lodge in Salonika, Greece.
Yeah,
and it was the major lodge there in Greece and Turkey, and they at that time that area actually was owned by Turkey.
That's right.
Greece, if I can remember.
Yes, right.
And most of the members of that lodge, they were all Jews.
Yep.
And
that's
it was
right.
From that the revolutionary activity began. The people called the rebels the Young Turks. They were able actually to cause the Pasha, the head Muslim leader in Turkey, to cede power to them, and there they took over.
Yep.
This was approximately within a decade or so of the Jewish takeover by Lenin and Trotsky and Stalin and the Soviet Union.
That's
so,
right.
You know, so this was an ongoing thing. But now in Turkey, the minute that they took over that country, Daryl, and I'm saying this mainly for the audience because I know you understand this history. because we've talked about it. But the instant that the Young Turks, who were Jews, took over Turkey. Now think about that. Jews pretending to be Muslims.
That's right.
Took over a major country, in fact, the strongest nation in the Middle East, maybe one of the strongest countries in the world at the time.
That's right.
Yeah, Turkey. They took over this great country of Turkey, and then they looked at their vast empire there, and they said, you know, what hath our God, you know, Lucifer, wrought for us here? And they saw a province, really it was almost an independent nation, called Armenia within their borders.
Mm-hmm. And a Christian one. And interesting, because they were the original Christians. They, in fact, their Christian Bible is the oldest known Aramaic Christian Bible in the world.
You know, you're right. And some of the churches, the old church buildings there, are some of the oldest in the world. Can you imagine, here is this country, an independent country, although it was a Turkish province, of Armenia, millions of Christian people wrapped around on one side, you know, by the Turks, and yet the Turkish government that control Armenia, the Muslims, let them live peaceably.
That's right.
You know, they were able to convert others. They were able to preach. They were able to have their worship services, just as, dare I say it, Saddam Hussein allowed the Christians to meet peacefully throughout Iraq when he was the
president. And even invited them as participants in his government.
Absolutely. And just as Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, Christians pretty well have free reign to do whatever they wish to, and Jews within the nation of Iran.
That's right, too.
Almost a maybe not quite like we have in France or Great Britain, but there was a certain freedom of religion. So here were these Christians for hundreds of years having the freedom to be Christians, to preach, to do whatever they want, to run their own culture, and the Muslims let them do it. But
yep.
Once the Jews, the secret, the covert, the crypto Jews took over the government, the Young Turks, they are called, of Turkey, that the Christians became their dreadful enemies.
Yep.
And they determined that they would conduct a genocide, a holocaust, and massacre these Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And thus began, I believe, what could be, for modern times, and let's say the last 150 years, the greatest holocaust of all time, greater than anything that was ever done by any Nazis.
Yeah.
So you know, we're not denying any kind of holocaust. We're saying here's another one.
But see, and here, well, let's kind of slide over to a modern moment here with Mr. Foxman and America, and the ADL has battled for 100 years. To keep this information out of circulation, out of the history books, out of recognition, and you know as well as I do, because the news, the internet is allowing truth to come out, these people are in real, real tough straits to keep these facts away from the public.
Well, yes, here's the situation now. First of all, the Jews, as President Harry Truman stated in his diary, he said they don't care about anybody but themselves. And, you know, they keep babbling on and on about their holocaust. But as far, he said, and he actually mentioned the Armenians.
Yeah.
He says, look at all the suffering and misery that came to the Armenians and all the others. But the Jews don't care about that. Now, the reason they don't care about the Armenian genocide was because they conducted it. And I believe, and my opinion is that Abraham Foxman of the Jewish ADL would know this.
That's right.
Because he has sources of history that Americans and Frenchmen don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Darryl, I've read a lot of the Armenian genocide, the Holocaust, caused by these crypto Jews who had taken over, seized the government of Turkey. The British consul sent a message back to his government in London. The
yep.
British consul. He was sent to investigate the reports of genocide, of horrors going on by the Turkish army that was controlled by the Jews. And he said the first thing they did was they made them leave all their homes. Now, talk about the Nazis. Think about this. Talk about Stalin. Here's what they did. They made them leave their homes, and they said, you must leave Armenia and Turkey for good. We're going to resettle you. And so there began a great blood massacre along a highway. They said, we're going to resettle you in places like Syria and Jordan, and so you've got to take whatever few belongings you have and walk by foot. And they said, we don't care if you're old, if you're maimed, if you've got babies. Leave your homes, leave your businesses, leave your churches, and go down this highway for hundreds and hundreds of miles in horrible weather, and we're going to march you at gunpoint and resettle you. But on the way, they massacred them all. It was all a trick to get them out of their homes. And once they were out on the highways, hundreds of thousands, the British consul said he saw with his own eyes. Listen to this there. This is disgusting. He said one of the things the Turks did, because of the Jewish orders given them, they would cut off the hands of the Armenian Christians. They would, you know, cut off their hands while we were still alive, and then they would go ahead and put the sword into their heart. Many of them would take the hands as souvenirs. They would take them home, they would dry them up with some kind of chemical, and the Jews loved these. They were souvenirs. These hands, they would keep them as talismans, as charms. Now, the British consul said that he saw so many severed hands. He said if you put these hands 12 feet across, you could, and one by, you know, stack them all on the ground, side by side, he said you could make a highway hundreds of miles long just of severed human hands. That was the British consul in his report to the British government of what the young Turks, who were crypto-Jews, had done to those Christians. Abraham Foxman says, I don't know anything about that. We're not going to discuss that.
But, you know, Tex, here's the interesting thing. There was a bigger game plan behind that massacre because the Turks were also the controllers of Palestine. And you know that just prior to that slaughter, the Balfour document, which Lord Rothschild received from the British government, was guaranteeing the access to that land in a quid pro quo for World War I support from America. And so all of this kind of fits into a larger scheme.
It does. And, you know, the Jews at that time were so thrilled with the massacre of the Armenians that they actually sent out, in my book, Codex Magica, I have a picture of a New Year's Day card that a Jewish organization sent out to all of its clients showing the Ouroboros serpent wrapped around the whole world. And, you know, they said the path of the serpent, just like in the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion book, talks about that serpent that travels slowly, constricting its body around the whole world. And there they were in Turkey. There they were in Armenia. And you're right there. They said, now we can take control of Palestine.
That's right.
That's next on the path of the serpent.
Yeah.
And, of course, in 1945, with what happened there, and then finally in 1948, with Truman and Stalin making a pact together and within minutes of each other, recognizing the Zionist government. So here we have the communists who were the Zionists in Russia working with Harry Truman, a 33rd degree Mason. The only thing about poor old Truman was he sort of resented the fact that he was their stooge, so he secretly wrote a diary exposing the Jews. At the same time, he was taking orders from Bernard Baruch and others. He said he didn't like it. It made him sick, but he had to do it anyway.
Well, we've looked into Untermeyer, and of course, Ben Friedman has become an integral part of our educating process. When Ben Friedman, having been part of the armistice discussions in the Paris peace talks after World War I, and he was there, he was present. So, I mean, this is a first-person account that came from Ben Friedman. And Benjamin Friedman's work in the early 1960s was a watershed event because what it did was, for the first time, give us a look at the inner workings from someone who participated in it. And now, there were people after the fact that said Friedman wasn't purely interested in justice. I don't care what he was interested in. He nailed the facts. And the fact is, it goes back to 1961 in a speech. Now, of course, where we are today is just a, it's not, it's a hop, skip, and a jump from these events. This is not that long ago, Tex. We're talking less than 100 years. That's the lifetime of some people around us. We're in the midst right now of an end game of these people, and I'm trying, you're trying, and a very few number, the numbers are not big, but we're all trying diligently here to get this real information out, because if people stop at George Bush, or they stop at the Illuminati, or they stop, they're never going to get to the real criminals. And what we've decided is, we have to start fixing our sights on the people doing it. The Brothmans of the world, the Schiffs, the Loebs, the Kahns, the Sterns, the Brooks families, the Crown family, the Emanuel family, these are the people that are actually pulling the levers today. And they're the ones that we have to look at to stop it.
The Louders, the Brothmans, and all of those you mentioned, The interesting thing, and you mentioned that this is the end game. Now,
yeah.
let me, if you don't mind, let me just explain to people why we, I'm taking the liberty of including you in this category. And when I say what I say, I believe you will agree with me on this.
Yep.
The reason I do, because I know of your passion for truth and your compassion for human beings, Darryl.
Thank you.
You see, the fact is that in our desire to do this, what we're trying to do is to save the Jewish people.
Yep.
We're trying
yep.
to rescue a great number of them who really have been deceived and gulled themselves.
Oh boy, are you so right about this. This is my big weight that I carry, is the fact that I don't want people who've been lied into supporting this. Like many American Christians who are considered Zionists as well, these people are just dupes. And do I want to see them suffer? Absolutely not. And this is so important, Tex. Go on, please, because this is a real important point.
Well, you know, it's just like the Freemasons. The real plot, and you and I know this, the real plot is that when this takeover occurs, the Masons who have for years, for centuries, helped the Zionists to gain control, then they will be systematically destroyed. They will be taken and killed.
That's right.
It's interesting to me. You know, George Orwell wrote 1984.
Mm-hmm.
But if you read the history, the biographies of Orwell, something happened to him quite significant. You see, he was a real believer in communism and Marxism. And
yep.
so he volunteered even to go over to Spain, as you know, George
mm-hmm.
Orwell is a young man.
Yep.
He was going to help the Marxist communists to take over Spain and destroy the right-wing, movement there. And as part of this whole structure, you know, the communists had taken over already all the Soviet Union countries. And so now Orwell, you know, as many British intellectuals are, infused with this Fabian Marxist spirit.
That's
so
right.
He goes over there. Now, because of his college education and his writing skills, they put him to work in a communist newspaper, sort of like, you know, the Daily Worker or the Pravda or something.
Mm-hmm.
They're in Spain. And there he was inspiring everybody to revolt and against the monarchy and to support the communists and all that. And then a friend one day came to him and said, I've got some shocking news for you, George. He said, what's that? He said, it's a terrible thing, I almost hate to tell you. And George Orwell says, well, tell me. He said, you won't believe this, but you are on the list to be purged, to be murdered. As soon as Spain falls, they're going to take you out and shoot you. He said, well, why would they do that? I'm an avowed Marxist. Why would they kill somebody like me? I'm one of them.
Mm.
They said, but you know too much. You know about the methods. You know the techniques.
Yeah.
You're one of the knowers, the insiders. And now they cannot allow you to live. Once they take over, There will be a purge. Your name is already on in their files. I've seen it. And he said, not only that, not only you, but thousands of others who came from the United States, from Britain, other countries who believe in this cause, all of you are to be killed. They can't allow you to live because, after all, you're revolutionaries. And once they take control, they don't want revolutionaries anymore.
That's right. They want dupes. They want people carrying the water.
Absolutely. So Orwell was so shocked. This changed his whole attitude, and I believe it to use George Bush's word about catapulting propaganda, it catapulted him into the other camp, saying, "Whoa, that something is." You know, whether it's the left side or the right side, they've got us whipsawed here between communism and Nazism and so.
Well, you know, you've done some very upfront work, and here's one I wanted to ask you about, because I've never been able to get perfect confirmation on this, but you found some information about two Bushes, the Solomon Bush and George Bush of the 1760s, who came over from Bavaria as New Bohemians and started circulating amongst Masonic lodges and whatnot, and it seems to me that these might be the predecessors of the Bush family. Now, I've never been able to confirm it, but I do know the Pierce family that he married into were high-level Masons. I knew that, and I knew the Walker family was as well. But the information I got about the Bushes was that there's a Solomon Bush in history and a George Bush also, and they both came over in the 1760s, I believe. Do you have more information on that?
I have some, and you know, I have to go back into my files and find that. You know, the one Professor George Bush, I think it was in 1844, he was a professor, if I recall, from Harvard. But he wrote the book about predicting that Israel would be revived as a nation again.
Mm-hmm.
His name, what is his name? George Bush. He was a professor. And so now we have President George Bush from Harvard University, graduate. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's easy to graduate from Harvard or Princeton or Cambridge or the big school they've got there in Paris. Forget the name of it.
Sorbonne.
yeah, the elite school. If you got plenty of money, you know, you don't need good grades if you're a John Kerry or a George Bush or a Ted Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
They'll make sure you make the C-minus average at least. You may get through school.
Well, so, the Solomon Bush, what I found out about Solomon Bush was he was involved in spreading money around in the Mason lodges and become currying favor is what I found, and I couldn't get any farther than that with him. I wasn't able to get to the Prescott connection, but it was pretty clear to me that there was something there. There's smoke there. I don't know if there's fire.
The most interesting character, I believe, is not the Bushes, but a man named Haim Solomon,
mm-hmm.
as you know. I was invited to a prophecy conference one time, and I guess this is before I really discovered everything I know, you know, about the Zionist. And a man named David Allen Lewis, who was the best-known prophecy teacher in the Assembly of God denomination, invited me, and this was in Springfield, Missouri.
Yeah.
So I went there, and he had invited also, and I didn't know this, but they were there, and you know, I met them right before I spoke. He had invited. They have a religious affairs consul at the Israeli embassy, some Jewish guy from Israel, and he coordinates things among the Christian community. So he's working in the Christian community. So they have a guy who's a consul, like an ambassador, so that he can, you know, work with John Hagee and all of the other traitors to Christianity in Judaizing the Christian church. He was there, and also some Israeli general was visiting the United States, and he was invited there. And the speaker got up, David Allen Lewis, and with tears in his eyes, talked about his talk. Now, here was a Christian prophecy conference, right? And this is the time when I really began to open my eyes. What is going on here? I better go to God's Word and find out about this. He gets up, and instead of preaching Jesus or Bible prophecy, Mr. Lewis, of the Assembly of God, their top guy, by the way, he was also affiliated with Jim and Tammy Faye Baker. He was one of their big main speakers. I didn't know that either. But first time I'd met Lewis, Lewis gets up and with tears in his eyes talked about a guy named the great Chaim Soloman who saved America by coming to the rescue with finances from his European friends. The American Revolution was saved when Chaim Soloman, a sickly old man, got out of bed. You know, he had a terrible case of influenza because the Continental Congress needed money, and he wrote them. You know, he was able to get with his friends in Europe, banking friends. And boy, that got me to researching. Who is this Chaim Soloman? Now, it's interesting. I visited Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Now, that's where the Liberty Bell is.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, that's the, you want to learn about American patriotism, go to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Okay, so there I am, the great site of patriotism for America, and I go to see the Liberty Bell. And I had another place where I was going to see, and I had it on my agenda, was the Jewish Museum of American History.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew it was in the city of Philadelphia, but I had the address, but I didn't realize it was right across the street from the Liberty Bell.
Yeah.
They gave it prime property right there in that very, you know, popular tourist area. So I looked at the Liberty Bell, visited that, then Wanda and I, my wife, and we had our daughter and our grandson with us. I looked right across the street, and there was a Jewish museum. So I walked, I said, well, here it is right here. We don't have to go find it. We're already parked. Let's go visit it. Guess whose statue was in front of the museum? They, in their little courtyard, statue of Chaim Soloman, and his name, or the title underneath it, was Financier of the American Revolution. Well, to make a long story short, I found out from doing a lot of research that Chaim Soloman was a Rothschild agent. He came to America in 1774,
mm-hmm.
2 years now before the Declaration of Independence. And people like James Madison were penniless, and suddenly their bank accounts were brimming with cash.
Yeah.
Now, here's the only thing that saved America, and I'm going to be very honest about it. We had these aristocratic people, the Scottish Rite, a Frenchman named Stephen Morin, a Jew, came over and brought the principles of the Illuminati and set up the Scottish Rites. Alexander Hamilton, who became the Secretary of the Treasury, and others kept him. And the Scottish Rite Masons, who were Illuminized, took over basically America. And working out of, you know, the Green Dragon Inn, which is sort of significant, they're in Boston. They have the Boston Tea Party and all that nonsense.
Yeah.
Basically, the Masons took over America. Now, they had a little problem. They needed to have a central government and control it with Rothschild as the he's running everything. His idea came up for a national bank.
Yeah.
And it and the currency would be controlled, of course, by Rothschild. And remember, many of these men were aristocratic, but they had joined the Scottish Rite. They had abandoned the Lodge of Great Britain.
Yep.
Okay? Grand Lodge of Great Britain, and gone over to the Scottish Rite. The Scottish Rite was brought to America by an Illuminist named Stephen Morin, M-O-R-I-N, who first Illuminized Alexander Hamilton there in the West Indies, and then Hamilton became a friend of Washington, and Washington then became a Scottish Rite Mason. All of the lodges in America very quickly became Illuminized, and they were called Scottish Rite, whereas before they were allied with the British United Grand Lodge.
Yep.
So here comes Mr. Chaim Soloman with all of his money from the Rothschilds, spreading it very liberally to Madison and others who needed money, and then the others just said, this is a way we can enrich ourselves. Now, after they had won our freedom, America, then they came up with a Constitution. Now, the American people suspected a rat here.
Yep.
If you look at the history of America, the American people as a whole said, you know, we're willing to improve things with a Constitution. But one thing is missing, and you know, they had just a few people who actually were Christians. One man was a man named John Leland, if I can remember. And he said to Madison and others, wait just a minute. We don't see any rights of the people enumerated in this Constitution. Where do we have freedom of religion, freedom of speech, the right to keep and bear arms? Where is all that? And they said, oh, you don't worry about that. You know, we have only your best interest in mind. You don't, that doesn't need to be listed. Everybody knows you've got those rights.
Now, that was Jefferson's camp. The side that Jefferson was on was the people.
Well, what finally happened, of course, was they knew that they could not get the 13 states to approve this Constitution, the people, to vote for it, until they agreed that they would give a Bill of Rights. You know, that's why, you know, people, I ask people, I go out on the street almost, I say, why are our Bill of Rights 10 amendments? Why didn't they just put them in the original Constitution? And people look at me with blank expressions on their faces, Daryl.
Mm-hmm.
They say, oh, I don't know. I don't know why they didn't put them in there. Well, I know they weren't in there in the first place. They didn't intend for them to be there. But see, the people rose up and messed up the plans. Now, they have spent over 200 years trying to undo the 10 amendments of the Constitution.
Yep.
Now, finally, they have their Zionist, Kabbalistic judges now in many of our courtrooms and everything. And with all the legislators they control, they're finally beginning to quickly unravel our Constitution. But it's taken them 200 years. Now, they must hate that Bill of Rights.
Oh, boy, don't they ever.
They just hate that thing because the people rose up. Now we have the French Connection. Now we have Tex Mars and just a few others out there.
That's right.
Praise God. And now I just feel this, talk about a surge. The Bushes. I feel a surge of truth moving through the population. And I believe people said, hold on. And you know, you mentioned this is the end game for them.
Yep.
They feel so confident they're fixing to grab hold of our throats. But they might just find out that we have a fist that's ready for, I'm not talking about us using violence. I believe if people just knew the truth, they didn't have to use violence to get the Bill of Rights. They just said no.
That's exactly what my partner Eric constantly points out, Tex. He says, if we say no to these people, they don't get electric to their buildings. They don't get a plumber to come in. They don't get a food service. They don't. These people can. We can say no to them, and they get nothing.
They get. And you know, you were telling me we were discussing, Daryl, before the program, that you and Chris Bolin had exposed the Rahm Emanuel connection.
Yep.
I'd love to talk about that a little bit more because.
Yep.
I'm telling you, if the American people knew what Rahm Emanuel has done to this country, they would really be. In fact, you and I would have to contain them and say, no, don't pick up your rifles, don't make homemade bombs, don't do it. We would have to try to steal the spirit of the people ourselves, which you know I'm willing to do. I don't want to see violence because they want us. The elite want us to use armed violence against them. So they can come back with massive violence against us. I know that's what they want. We should not give it to them.
This guy, Emanuel's father, of course, they changed their name upon arrival in America, but he was part of the Irgun. And now the Irgun was identified as a terrorist organization worldwide back in the 30s. 1930s. Now, this is the apple of this man's fruit here, and of course he has not fallen far from the tree. And what he's done, of course, you know as well as I do, he's bottled up the Democrat Party. But take a look on the other side of the aisle with this guy Melman running the Republican Party. Republican Party chairman named Melman. They've got both parties bought and paid for.
Yeah, Melman, you know, is not only Jewish, of course, he's homosexual.
Yeah.
And he was appointed to his position by Bush.
Yeah.
Many people here in Austin, Texas, where George Bush reigned as governor, people would come to me even before he was governor, and they said, hey, have you heard about that Bush son named George? And they would tell me stories about his homosexual activities.
Mm-hmm.
That guy goes to these gay parties and goes around nude and sniffs cocaine, does dances on tables. And they said he's George Herbert Walker Bush's son. Well, the next thing I know, the guy wants to run for governor of Texas. Now, there were several people who've been very involved in politics and that wanted to run for governor for Republican. Suddenly, they all backed out. There was nobody even running on the Republican ticket except old George W.
Yeah.
And here's a guy, he was given free, as far as I can remember, 1% interest in the Texas Rangers Ball Club. Then he runs around telling everybody, well, I've got experience running an organization. I was owner of the Texas Rangers. He had 1% ownership that was given to him. And I think he was some little oil company in the Middle East that was given to him by Arab sheikhs as a thank you for what his dad did in, you know, the first Persian Gulf War or something. But old George Bush suddenly ends up being governor, and, you know, nobody knows of anything he did effective. If you can ask, oh, yes, I'm sorry, there is one law that he got passed. Let me give him credit for it. Could I?
Yeah, go ahead.
It was a law that George Bush got passed as governor for the state of Texas, which gave illegal Mexican immigrants full tuition rights. In other words, they have, just as if they were citizens of the state of Texas, they have the same, they pay the same cheap tuition. And he got that for all the universities in the state of Texas. So get this. There's 49 other states than Texas, right?
Yeah.
If you come here to go to college at a state university in Texas, you'll have to pay three times as much tuition if you're from one of those other 49 states as Mexican illegals pay. Now imagine, Jose Gonzalez pays $2,000 a year tuition, and you pay $6,000 because you're from Oklahoma or New Mexico or California or Ohio. This is the only legislation that George Bush passed while he was governor of Texas.
Well, but you know, there's other things about George down there. I mean, we know his dad was involved in that Franklin cover-up that was going on up in Oklahoma and Nebraska.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had that flying in the young children from Boys Town and the whole bit. And we have sussed out all that information as well. Now, George didn't fall far from his father's tree either, did he?
No, he didn't. So, you know, you have this... you know, George Herbert Walker Bush, Cheney. You know, it's interesting. They had this book called The Transformation of America.
Mm.
Now, I didn't push that book. I didn't promote it. It was almost too sordid for me. It disgusted me talking about the sexual perversions of George Bush and Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
Now, this was before anybody even knew who Dick Cheney was. This book comes out.
Yep.
At the time, I didn't want to even believe it. It was so horrible. But they talked about Dick Cheney and others who would take women out, strip them naked, and then take them out into the woods at the hunting preserves of their buddies so nobody else could see what they're doing. And then they would send them out, give them, you know, a 30-minute head start, and then they would go hunting for these people. Actually kill them.
Really?
And then I thought, you know, they would go out there and take drugs, and they would go out there and hunt these women down, and some they let live. Some and they tortured, and some they killed. It was like a game. Isn't this, you know, sort of like Michael Vick, the football star, with these pit bulls? See, he loves to see them killed. He's a monster. Well, these men love to see these poor victims stripped naked, and they don't go hunt for deer or wild hogs. They hunt for human beings, and they loved it. Now, this was in this book, The Transformation of America. It was so horrible, I could not believe it. And then, of course, you know that Dick Cheney got a little bit of publicity because he shot a very prominent Texas lawyer in the face with a shotgun.
Mm.
And I have this feeling that lawyer betrayed him in some aspect or another. So they said, well, I tell you what, as punishment, you're going to be the target today. Take off your clothes. And it turned out that it was on a preserve run by the Republicans down in South Texas. So that's where George Herbert Walker Bush and his friends, Cheney and those, that's where they go hunting. But they don't hunt for animals, they hunt for human animals.
Well, you know, there's some fantastic stories out there, but there were a couple of people who came up with similar charges about being violently raped, and one woman in Texas actually came up with a story about George, and she was killed. She was murdered. She filed a lawsuit, and she turned up dead.
I have a copy of that lawsuit. I have a copy of the news article. She was a black woman, very, very good-looking woman. She was a businesswoman, very successful in business.
Mm-hmm.
But she was one of these people that had been taken, kidnapped, raped. And when she complained about it, she claimed in her lawsuit that after she filed suit against George Bush, that FBI agents came to her home and they beat her and raped her themselves. Now, again, I don't know the truth of all that, but it's interesting that she was found dead. Now, the county coroner said that, you know, it was ruled suicide. But the interesting thing about it was the gun shot her in the head.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that the suicides of women are almost never by gunshot to the head. I don't know whether it's vanity or what, but women just don't want to shoot themselves in the face, you know, or the head.
Yeah.
And men, when they kill themselves with a gun, suicide, they usually do shoot themselves in the head. But women never do, almost. It's like 1 out of 1,000. They always take poison or cut their wrist or, you know, do something else. But they do not shoot themselves in the head. So that's what happened to her in her, quote-unquote, being suicided.
Yeah.
And isn't it interesting, the press went wild with stories of Bill Clinton's suiciding of, what was the guy's name, his counsel, White House?
Yeah, Foster.
Yeah, Vince Foster. But who, honestly, this murder, that's what I believe what it was, of this Houston area woman who had filed a lawsuit against George Bush, you're the only talk show host that has ever brought this up.
Well,
that has had the courage. I have never seen it in a newspaper. Why is it that Vince Foster got all this attention, but here's this black businesswoman that filed a lawsuit against Bush, the next thing, and by the way, she said in her lawsuit that she received, that she got a phone call from the White House, and they said, hold for the president, and Bush got on the line and told her, you're going to end up dead, woman, if you don't withdraw that lawsuit. And I think
these people are willing to go to any lengths. Now, here's the interesting thing, though. You have a very substantial following, Tex, of people who trust your veracity, and they trust your honesty in so many ways that to do that to you would be a huge mistake for them, of course. So. And the same holds true with me. I've got a large following and a very large family here in France. Over 150 people in my immediate family from my wife's side. It'd be a very huge error to do that. So what they've concentrated on with the French Connection is to destroy my character through lies. They've made up things like I'm the next Bin Laden, and I'm going to move to Iran, so that the Americans can invade. They've said my wife is black, which I don't care if she was black. If I loved her, I'd love her, but she doesn't happen to be black. They've said that I have no right to be a truth seeker because I live in France. Just millions of character assassination attempts. Because they really don't have another alternative, because if they do anything to me or to Eric, this thing would explode. Now, they did do something to Christopher Bolin, and he had no family to back him up, and they've been trying 24/7 to destroy his research. And this is the guy, Tex, that put out the information on Chertoff. Now, do you remember when the information that Chertoff's cousin wrote the popular mechanics piece about the lies about 9/11?
Oh yes, I sure did.
Well, it was. Everybody said that there was not the same family, and both Chertoffs said that I'm not related to this man, and the attorney general said I'm not related to that man. Well, Bolin calls his aunt, the Chertoff's aunt, and the aunt admits to Bolin in the conversation that they're first cousins.
I see. Okay.
So Bolin puts it in the article, and of course, you know, you don't make an enemy out of this monster Chertoff. And so what they started to do is they tried to destroy his character, his reputation, and he already had a very limited family to support him, and now they're trying to say that he's just run away. And we know from having worked with him regularly that that's a farce. And we either believe that he's either been kidnapped or murdered, but he's no longer in circulation, and we know that as a fact.
Well, this could be a harbinger, and so people need to know about this. This could be a harbinger, because it is always the pattern of these people when they take over a government that they let's just call them the list of the disappeared.
Yep.
Begins to burgeon. So
yep.
So this may be what happened with the Chris Boleyn, but rather than letting him become a cause célèbre, they say, well, he'll just suddenly disappear. And I want to encourage people, too. Suddenly they tune on the radio and the French Connection is not on. Don't let it in there. Do something about it. And I know I will, because that would be their pattern. And, you know, here in America, under the Bush doctrine pushed by the Attorney General and so forth, they have these security letters. When they come and arrest you, they give your family surreptitiously, and they don't put it in the press. They come and arrest you and take you away as a potential terrorist. Then they give your family, your wife and so forth, a security letter. And in that security letter, it says that she may not go to the press. She may not go to the local police. She can't tell her friends what has happened to you, or they'll come and arrest her. And this is a monstrous system. All I can say is they learned a lot from the Nazis and the communists and the Young Turks.
Yeah.
Because this is what they're doing now in America. Can you imagine getting them coming and taking away your husband or your wife, and then them giving you a security letter that says you can't even tell anybody that they're gone? I mean, this is the talk. I wonder how many disappeared are there in America right now?
This is a point we've been making. And did you ever heard of a man named Peter Khawaja?
Yes, I've heard that name. Uh-huh. Remember he exposed the chem spraying and all that?
That's right. He has been disappeared for a very long time. And we also think, and this is a question, I'm so glad you brought this up. Do you remember the research of a woman named Carol Valentine?
Oh, yes. I hope nothing's happened to Carol Valentine.
Well, I don't know, but she's fallen off the map, and no one seems to be able to ever speak to her directly, anyone. And her website doesn't have any, follow-up work on it anymore. And, of course, you know, she brought forth the Nesta Webster's work and, of course, Elizabeth Dilling's and Henry Ford's work on all of these facts. And now we can't seem to locate any information on Carol. And we're wondering, is Khawaja and Valentine some of the exact kinds of activities that happened to Mr. Boleyn?
Well, that's very possible. And, you know, another one is Linda Thompson, the attorney.
Yes, is she missing?
I have not heard from, no one's heard from her after, all the thing. You know, she was really one of the big leaders in the militia movement. Suddenly she just appeared. She's just gone.
She's from Virginia, and she was fighting like a banshee over there.
Yeah, she was very active, had very large audiences, and then suddenly she just left. Now, whether they threatened her and told her to drop out, or whether something happened, I don't know. But again, maybe this disappeared thing is bigger than we think. Maybe the only thing you can do is to try to become as visible as you can. You know,
that's right.
I do know they're constantly trying to entrap us. You know,
yep.
I've had people who call me, and I know you must have too.
Yes.
They call you, and if you're kind enough to talk to them, they suddenly say, don't you think we ought to just get our guns and go out and just shoot these guys? Don't you think we ought to just take these congressmen and hang them, and give them a summary court-martial and hang them? They want you to say, oh, yes, yes, do that. And the reason why then, you know, you'll immediately be arrested. For conspiring across state lines or across international borders.
Well, actually, what I have done, though, is I've told people that they need to seriously consider exercising their right to bear arms in the event that things go south. And I've also said to them that when a martial law is ultimately thrown upon the public, that they may have some hard choices to make in relation to that Second Amendment. And those are just prudent thoughts. They're not calls to somebody to go out and start shooting and things like this. These are things that, as you pointed out, our Constitution demands from us.
You know, Somebody once said, and I don't know who, but it's a pretty smart saying, Daryl, that the only difference between the Gestapo and of the 30s and the Bush administration today is that the Gestapo knocked before they broke down your doors.
Yeah.
Now they don't knock. They just come with a black uniform on. Many times, you and I know, they don't even announce that they're police. They come with a battering ram and these black uniforms and black masks on. Now, I'll tell you what. If they come in my home in the den of night with black uniforms on with a battering ram and don't announce who they are, I'm gonna aim for their lower parts, and you know what parts I mean. You know, and you have every right to do that. Now, I'm not, if a guy comes and he's got a police uniform and you know it's police, well, you have a duty as a citizen. Okay, well, don't be shooting at a policeman. But if a guy comes in the black uniform, doesn't announce himself, backs down your door, and he's got a weapon, you have every right to blow that guy away. And so is this lawlessness? Yeah, on their part.
That certainly
what
is.
What you're doing is defending yourself. Again, I'm distinguishing between police who announce themselves as police and legitimately are police and have a warrant and all these other things, and just the jackbooted thugs of today's Zionist nations.
Well, you know, and see, but see, here's the problem that we're going to face because if this financial mess continues as it unabated as it's going, and we end up with pockets of anarchy and mayhem, they're going to use that anarchy and mayhem created by themselves as excuses to come in and take draconian measures. And if you submit to that, you are going to be in one of these multitude of camps that they've constructed. And once they've got you under their control, they'll do with you as they will. And the problem is that if we allow them to, if you are already in their control firmly, you have no hope. No hope whatsoever. Look what they did to the steppes of Russia. They killed 60 million. Look what they did to the Armenians. Look what they did to the Chinese under these same people. Look what they did to the Jews who would not go to Palestine. You know, all the Jews that they killed in Nazi Germany were the ones that wouldn't leave Germany to go to Palestine. They were the ones who did not accept the Zionist bent on things. So what do the Zionist Jews do? They get Hitler to put them all in camps and start killing them. Why? Because it was perfect for the Zionists. They got rid of their opposition.
Well, yes, and you know, here again, they wanted to drive their people. And it's interesting too. You know, when they drove out the Palestinians, when the Zionists, the Irgun, terrorists of the Zionists and so forth took over Palestine in 47, 48, you know, they would drive around with speaker trucks, you know, speakers, the big speakers on trucks, as you know, into the Palestinian towns and villages and announce, "The Jews are on their way. They're going to massacre all of you. You better get out right now or you're dead."
Yep.
And so they were scared, all the people, and they immediately left. So then the Jews just came in. Of course, the ones who couldn't leave, that they were massacred in their beds, you know, the ones that were in hospital beds.
Well, they actually were murdering women, pregnant women, and ripping the babies out of their womb. This is what happened in some of these villages. And did you know that 40% of the original Palestinian villages of Israel have been completely wiped away from history? There's not even a reference to them in any history books anymore. These towns and villages were once housed thousands, some of them tens of thousands, have been completely eradicated from our lexicon, as it were, today. And the monstrous behavior of these people cannot be underestimated.
No, you know, again, there are some, even some Jews, thank God, who are finding out what their fellow compatriots have done.
Yep.
I was reading an article, I believe it was in Jerusalem Report. I can't remember, Daryl, but it was by a Jew, and I really appreciated what he wrote. He said he was an American Jew, and he was really all enthused with his Zionist spirit, you know, from his parents and all that.
Yep.
So he goes over, like sort of an exchange student, to stay in Israel a while. And he goes in this small town, and the Jewish couple, family that took him in there, You know, they took him in, and so they had a really nice home. I mean, it was brick, and it looks like it had been there 200 or 300 years, but it was, you know, just a very nice home. And so he was saying, what a nice home you have, you know. Did you build this yourself? And the Jewish man of the house said, oh, no. This used to be a Palestinian town. And the young American Jew said, oh, well, did you buy this then from a Palestinian? And the guy laughed and he said, no, I didn't buy it. I took it. He said, what do you mean you took it? He said, you don't know these things? And the American Jew said, what things? He said, we came into this town and we killed all of them. The ones that wouldn't leave, we killed them all. And then we took their businesses, we took their homes. This was owned by a Palestinian. We took over, of course, the town hall, the city clerk, and we changed all the deeds to Jewish names. And that's how we have this. And the American said, you didn't pay for it? He said, well, no, of course not. We took it from those slimy Palestinians. And the American Jew said he couldn't believe it, because he had been told, that this wasn't true, that they didn't steal homes and businesses, that the Palestinians hated the Jews so much that when the Jews came, they just said, we don't even want to be around you. We'd rather go live in refugee camps.
Yeah.
And so, you know, which does not make any sense. Would you leave your town?
No.
Your family leave their business, their home, everything, and prefer to live in tents and refugee camps out in the desert? No, of course not. But the guy, the Jewish man who owned the house, laughed at him and said, you don't know? I didn't buy this house. We stole it. And the American Jew said that this changed his whole outlook. Now he doesn't know what to think. What should I think?
Well, you know, I've got hundreds of Jewish supporters, and many of them they're honest to a fault in many of my communications with them. I make sure that I qualify my statements and say when we talk about these crimes that it's not all Jews involved, and I also mention that the biggest group of that has been lied to the most is the Jewish community itself. And of course, when you start looking into the work of the Sabbateans and how they've been trying to become the spokespeople for all Jewry, and that includes the B'nai B'rith organization and the Jinsa and the rest of these groups, you take a look at that and you say to yourself, okay, where do you draw the line as a Jew? Well, more and more people are saying, I draw the line where the truth starts. And Smith, Hupschmidt, Bolin, Mars, and some others have been telling the facts, and they're starting a migration. And I'm telling you, Tex, the best way to defeat these people is from within.
Mm.
I think
that would be wonderful. And I, you know, I call them Jewish people. Here's the real problem, though. There's such, you know, in the Bible, and I'm a Christian. I don't hesitate to say it.
Yep.
It's interesting that in the book of Daniel, it says that the last days Antichrist, or king, will win his kingdom through flattery. He flatters people. And many Jews believe they're God's chosen. They alone are the super race on earth. And this is such flattery. And I'm afraid that many Jews have fallen for this, and it's so seductive to think that you're like a God person and everybody else is nothing but an insect or a cattle. And you know, of course this is a very evil thing. And the Bible, you know, God is anything but a racist. And so, but this is the belief. And of course Christians, many Christians come and tell me they believe that too. They've been Judaized and they believe that Jews are a superior race too.
Yeah. Well, they've been reading the margins of their Scofield Bible too long.
They have indeed.
Yeah.
And many of the newer versions too, you find, I believe the Lockman Foundation that came out with the New American Standard, the NIV. You know, the NIV is published by a publishing company owned by Rupert Murdoch.
Well, there you go. And of course he's a crypto as well. And you know, when we look at all these facts, Tex, what I wanted people to do now is become better informed. And one of the ways that can happen is through your library of books that you make available through your website. And they're very well priced. They're extraordinary. And including the book that Andrew Carrington Hitchcock put out and I helped with, and your Of course, your books, Codex Magica, and this latest one you're working on will also be available, but could you give people information on how to get your books, please?
Now, folks can just go on the Internet to powerofprophecy.com, powerofprophecy.com. We also have another website, conspiracyworld.com. And, of course, my new book, Codex Magica. I'm working on a newer book, but Codex Magica right now has a lot of interesting information about Zionism and their secret hand signs and so forth. In that book as well, the Illuminati hand signs, symbols, and so forth. But powerofprophecy.com. By the way, folks, they can also just write to us at Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733 in the United States. And just simply say, "Dear Tex, send me a free copy of your newsletter." We'll be glad to do that.
Well, Tex, you know, this file is a bit over an hour right now, and we've covered so much information that we could go on for. I think you and I, because we're so well versed in these facts, could go on for hours. I would love to have you back in the future. The battle is hotting up here. I think there is so much pressure coming from certain quarters of our public demanding answers that they are on the defensive in many ways, and I think they're feeling forced at this moment to start taking some of the actions they may well have wanted to take later. So I think this Iranian thing may well happen soon and some other things, but the financial mess is well on the way, and all I can say is that it's time for everyone to go to their family members and friends and tell them to have another look at the facts, including 9/11, including the government control, including all of it, and go to Texmar's website and go to my website, the French Connection, IamTheWitness.com. And Eric Hupschmidt's website, Huge Questions and Painful Questions. Take a look at these facts. And Tex, you're gonna have the last word here, for the French Connection tonight. You wanna, let everybody, in on anything, specific?
Well, I think the warning that you just gave, I don't have a 100% assurance that it's true, but I expect something very big is going to happen. Already we are seeing a financial collapse of sort, but it's nothing as to what could appear. I also understand there's tremendous options, stock options activity. There, people are buying puts. Somebody is buying billions of dollars of put options on the stock market, believing that the stock market by December 31st will have a terrific landslide downward. So that happened right before 9/11.
Yep.
Suddenly, American Airlines and the other airline, somebody went in and spent, $1.5 billion, was it, on stock puts.
Well, these latest puts that are going out right now are actually in the sum of $4.5 billion, and so it's even larger than what they did for 9/11. But as you're pointing out, Tex, no activity of this size has happened since 9/11, so this is the next biggest one since 9/11. You're right.
And, they've been exposed on 9/11 as it was a hoax. They did it. Now more and more information is getting out about that, and so they may be audacious enough to say, "Well, we've been checkmated on 9/11. Now we're going to have to go with a new one and let the conspiracy theorists find out about that." It'll take them years to discover the truth behind that one, and people will forget about 9/11 because, after all, after 9/11 happened, people quit talking about Waco. They quit.
Yeah. Or the Murrow Building.
Exactly. So there's something bigger that could occur, and I'm just afraid this is going to be some kind of a nuclear accident. And of course, the media will holler and scream. Who knows who they'll blame it on, whether it's so-called domestic terrorists or the Iranians.
Hmm.
Or a combination of so-called domestic terrorists working with Iranians. That would probably fit their mold real well. So, but watch out for that. And when it happens, remember, don't believe what the government tells you about it. It's all baloney. And be prepared, because I think that's when the police state, everything is in place now. They've been working heartily, and that's when the police state could very rapidly take place. So decide. I like what you said. Get with your friends. Get with others. Decide what you're going to do now, because events could happen very fast. When they do that. And by the way, Don't be a part of anything like this. Don't let anybody gull you into committing acts of violence. But do be prepared to defend yourself.
That's right.
Do buy guns. I think a little bit of dried food and water, is very, very important now. I'm not saying be a survivalist, go up in the mountains, hide in the caves. We've got to live. But be very watchful and be prepared, because things could break loose at any time. I pray they don't, that they won't. But everything we see now, the Bush-Cheney faction, they're taking their orders from the Rahm Emanuels of this world.
That's right.
And by the way, even before people knew who Rahm Emanuel was, I highly suspected he was the so-called mega.
Yeah, he is. I've heard the same thing, and I don't doubt that for a moment.
Yeah, it's. And by the way, another quick thing, I don't know if you're aware, but Michael Moore,
mm-hmm.
who, of course, seems to be doing good exposing...
Yes, you're going to tell me that Rahm Emanuel's brother is his agent.
Oh, well, I'm talking to the choir. I'm
sorry. Hey, Tex, you know something, Tex?
Okay.
You are so well-informed. There's only a few people I've ever spoken to, ever. That had this such a diversity of knowledge, and you know, it's such a breath of fresh air for Eric and myself, and it's so wonderful.
Well, I want to just end by saying, you know, the book of Daniel 12:10 says that in the last days the wicked shall do wickedly, and this is interesting, none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. And I think God gives certain people gifts. He's obviously giving you a gift here of understanding. And that is so important, to understand the times. But it isn't as fascinating that even many of the wicked themselves don't understand. They're just brought right forward to their deception and believing all the way that sometimes they're doing God a service.
That's right.
That's
the 40 million Zionist Christians.
Absolutely, it is. Oh, yeah, these are good, sincere people. And I believe some of the Jews are also good. They really believe that a Jewish utopia on earth can be brought and bring God's principles. But, you know, I don't know of any empire builder who has not been a bloody empire builder. Do you?
Not one. Not one. Not one in history. No, there is not a single example. Tex, again, you are a wonderful person to have on air. I will contact you later on. I hope to talk to you about better subjects someday. But until we get past this rough spot in world history, we're just going to have to keep our noses to the grindstone and try our darndest to stop them. And that includes all the things you just mentioned. And if you are a Christian, to pray that you can have the strength to get through this. And if you are not, if you have a different belief system, then look inward for that strength and try to buck up and fight harder, because we need every man on deck here. All hands on deck.
There you go. Well, Darryl,
thanks, Tex.
Eric, all the best to you as well.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, Tex Mars, wonderful man, honest researcher, and incredible writer. It's wonderful to have him on the French Connection today. Until the next time, Darryl Bradford Smith telling each and every one of you to please be well. Bye-bye now.